This is an AMI podcast.
Hey guys, welcome along to another episode of Double Tap. It is Thursday, it's the 26th of January 2023, and it's time to talk gaming as the Game Conference Awards have just concluded.
You're listening to Double Tap, your daily accessible technology show. Now, here's your hosts, Stephen Scott and Sean Preece.
Still no Sean Preece, sadly, but do you know what? He'll be back soon. I have that feeling because good news is he's now home. He's returned home and he is beginning his recovery after the snap on the tendon. It is, I can't imagine how painful it must be for him, but he is getting there. We've been sending him all your thoughts and best wishes. It means a lot to him. I know it really does. And also, thanks for your support on the show as well. Lots of you getting in touch to say, hey, look, what can I do? What can I demo? What can I do? Thank you so much for that. I really appreciate it. This is a fun time for me doing this show, but I am not going to deny I am missing my little Sean. I am missing him. So come back soon, Sean. Now, today we are going to talk about games, and in particular, the Game Conference Awards that have just concluded. In fact, just last night they concluded. It was a really interesting event, and it was hosted by none other than Steve Saylor, the blind gamer himself, also from Canada, and a great representative of the world and a great advocate of the world of gaming from a blind point of view, and of course promoting disability gaming and essentially the accessibility that comes with it. Now, I know it's a topic we don't often get into here on Double Tap, but I think that should change, especially as a result of these awards, because it was all focused on accessibility. It wasn't just a part of the event, it was the whole event. So really interesting. We're going to get into full detail and coverage right now. Coming up, we're going to hear from Steve Saylor, the host himself. He is going to join us a bit later. And we'll also hear from one of the winners at the event last night as well. But first, let me introduce someone who has been on the show with us before recently. He was talking about gaming then. He's back to do it today, and in particular, talk about these awards. It is Ben Breen, or as he's known to the world, Sightless Combat. Great to have you here on Double Tap, Sightless.
Thank you. Great to be back. Always a pleasure to be on things like this. It's amazing to see you again. It's been a while.
It has been a while, I know, and too long, if I'm honest. And we were planning to talk on the subject of video editing. A lot of people have been getting in touch with my show saying, how do you edit video when you're blind? And every time I get this question, I think, I need to get Sightless Combat on here. I need to get Sightless on because he knows. He's got the answers to all these questions. Now, sadly, today, that's not what we're going to talk about. But we are planning, aren't we? We're working on it together. Tell the audience that that's the case, and then they'll get off my back.
Yeah, that is the case. There are plans in the works. I'm not going to give too much away. But we do plan to talk a little more on the subject of how you video edit without the video at some point in the hopefully near future. So yeah,
very, very
look forward to that. Stay tuned.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, well, look, today we're going to talk about the Game Conference Awards. They took place yesterday. And yeah. Look, first up, I've got to say, what an incredible event, right? I mean, you know, fully accessible in every way. You've got ASL, you had BSL. In fact, I think signing in different languages, captions in different languages. You had audio description there as well. Everything was going on.
Yes, so much. Like, it was the most, probably the most accessible award show I've seen, which is, well, I mean, or not seen, I guess.
Yeah.
That's the best part of it, though. Like, you didn't have to see it to enjoy it. And there were no, you know, gaps left empty, as it were, as to what was going on. Audio description was, you know, very well crafted and well delivered, considering the tiny gaps that people had to describe between. So just, you know, trying to get descriptions of people in as they go. But, you know, of course, I can't speak to the visual accommodations, you know, like the signing or whatever. But the fact of the matter was, it was a great event and a lot of award shows could learn from this. You know, it doesn't matter how big the show, they could definitely accommodate these infrastructural integral pillars, if you like, that would definitely make it easier for me and so many others to watch these shows without having to say, what's going on? Who's coming up? What? Why are they all laughing?
And we do that all the time, don't we? We're always doing this with whatever it is. I must admit, this is where, it's funny, in the last couple of years, I've drifted away from watching television. movies to some extent as well. I mean, I love audio description. It's the only way I can enjoy a TV or film. Simple as that. But when it comes to live events, it is challenging because you just, there's so much you miss. And it's as if blind people have just, were never even noticed in these events, right? But this just never comes up.
Or at least very rarely. Like, the best part of it is, though, that, you know, I'm just thinking back to Chris McCausland doing, was it the Brits? Or one of the award shows. And they deliberately kind of hammed it up in the best way. They kind of made a joke out of it in a positive light. Which was, or at least I felt it was quite positive.
For our international audience, just to let people know, that's blind comedian Chris McCausland, who's very funny, brilliantly funny guy.
Yeah, very, very, very entertaining.
And he was hosting this event. I can't remember, was it Lee Mack, the comedian he was hosting with them?
Yeah.
And yeah, it was on, like you say, it was the Brit Awards or something like that. And they were making this whole joke. You should check it out on YouTube, because there was this whole thing about reading the auto cue. And it was like they were playing this whole. Go watch it; it's absolutely brilliant. But you know, it's interesting, it's because the thing is that gaming does seem to be, in a lot of ways, and I'm noticing this myself, just because of the people I follow on Twitter, the people I, you know, hear from, and the advocates in this space, people like yourself and others who talk about this. That generally in gaming now, there seems to be a real focus on accessibility, even at events, even at live events. That was even recognised at the Game Awards as well.
Yeah, in terms of, you know, live events and things, you know, it's definitely becoming a focus. That, you know, heck, the GA Conf Awards gave out an award for most accessible event.
So yeah.
If that doesn't show you what a focus there is on it, then I don't know what will.
Yeah.
You know, the fact of the matter is, Microsoft have been doing it for years. You know, Bethesda have started doing it or Ubisoft have started doing it with their things. There's all sorts of, you know, trailers and things that are being accessible. It's just interesting, though, that even now there are still, you know, there's still inaccessibility in games. But I love the fact that the events are accessible regardless, because you can enjoy the hype. I've been asked by people, oh, what's the point in having an accessible trailer if the game's not accessible? Make your trailer accessible, so then I can think, oh my God, I want to play that. And then, you know, have a look at how it might work and try and get assistance to play it if I need it. Hopefully I don't, of course. That would be the ideal. But, yeah, it's such a great thing to see a big, you know, not only the GA Conf Awards, but then the Developer Direct from Xbox on the same day, mere hours later, having audio description, again, of such a high standard, delivered by the wonderful Janissary as well and written by her. I may be slightly biased. She's a collaborator of mine. So
you are someone who is a very well-respected voice in this field. And that's why I'm so pleased you come on here, because I am...
Oh, you're too kind.
Well, no, but I'm serious, because look, I have to be totally upfront and honest. I'm not a gamer. I'm not someone who plays a lot of games. I'm not someone who totally understands this. And I guess when I started hearing about accessible games, I got very excited. Almost a little bit too excited, and people in the gaming community were saying, hang on a minute, Stephen, don't get too excited, because it's not as good as you think it is. It's getting there. There are improvements, of course, but, you know, let's not get too excitable about it. There's still a long way to go. What is the reality? I mean, you know, obviously these awards have shown great work that has been done to date, but what is the reality of gaming, in your case, as a blind gamer in 2023? What are the options?
The reality is there are still too few games that you can actually play without assistance, but it's definitely an improvement on what we would have before. So now you can play The Last of Us Part 1 and 2. So a game that was previously several years old and much loved wasn't playable. And then Last of Us Part 1 came out last year with audio description and, you know, all the other features that were, you know, part of Part 2. And, you know, It's a matter of, you can now play that start to finish without needing any assistance to do it. God of War Ragnarok came very close to being fully playable, but there were certain things holding it back, which was a shame. But, you know, the stride from God of War 2018 to Ragnarok is absolutely phenomenal. It is such a big leap, and I can't wait to see what that team and anyone who worked on that project is going to go on to do. It's going to be very interesting to see where that goes. And even stuff like As Dusk Falls that released last year, that's a first of its kind in terms of, you know, a choice-based, you know, driven adventure on consoles. And even stuff like Sea of Thieves, where they're continuing to make improvements, you know, in a live service setting, which is not something you've, you know, we've seen before, really, that, you know, a game that's previously had, you know, virtually nothing has had very key pieces added to it. It doesn't make it playable, but it makes it sort of workable with the right people, which is a great start. We're still looking, though, for, you know, more game developers to rise to the challenge of making games accessible to people without sight. Because I've had people, you know, say to me, you know, they're called video games for a reason. Go outside and get a new hobby. And one person who said, I work with blind people. They don't play video games. It's not the done thing, which still years later baffles me. So,
I cannot, you know, believe still, that's still an attitude.
I know.
That's so ridiculous.
It boggles my mind. But most of the time it's because people don't understand how it works in the first place, which is why I continue enjoying doing my job and loving doing what I do, streaming on Twitch as part of RNIB, you know, showing off how it all, everything works with, you know, things like Hearthstone, which is now resurrected almost from inaccessibility because the mod's been taken on by a bunch of new community developers, and that's going amazingly well. And even stuff like, you know, Slay the Spire. So the card game thing is still happening very much, but there are developers working, I don't doubt, on various projects that could be accessible if given the right sort of care and attention by, you know, consultants, by the team, by the publishers, and even by PR and marketing, where, you know, alt text and audio description, so having images described for you via text that's built into the image itself on social media platforms, for instance, you know, those crucial things are sometimes not done when they are relatively easy to do. So there's a lot to do, but a lot has happened in, even in the past year, that makes me hopeful for the future, I think is a good way to sum it up.
Yeah, and this was the 2022 awards. This was looking back at last year. You mentioned The Last of Us Part 1. It won in three categories: for best low vision and accessibility, it won for most improved, and also the studio that makes the game, Naughty Dog, they won the most dedicated studio award as well, which is incredible.
Yeah.
You mentioned God
of
War. All
well deserved, of course.
Let me get this one right, because I always struggle with these names. Was it God of War Ragnarok or something? What's it called?
Ragnarok.
Ragnarok. I was close. There you go.
Yeah.
Well, it won for the AAA Excellence Award. For best in deaf and hard of hearing accessibility. That's interesting. Yeah. So obviously captioning, you know, they've put a lot of work in there.
Subtitles, other things, directionality of audio, I think, was part of it. But the best part of it is, regardless of where you look at Ragnarok from, there's a chance you'll find improvements from your own perspective. So, you know, as a gamer without sight, the fact that I'm currently playing through it on the hardest difficulty with assistance where required is the label I'm now using, you know, for going off and finding loot that isn't featured or trackable on the main path, that kind of thing. You know, so assistance where required, but I'm still playing it through on the hardest difficulty, which is a thing that I would never have dreamed I'd be able to do in 2018. So being able to do it now, even with the caveats that I can't do it all myself, is just so encouraging. I'm like, I'm saying to people, I'm playing on the hardest difficulty. They're like, you what? So, you know, whether you look at it from the point of view of, you know, whether you need, you know, navigational assistance, cognitive features, or anything else, you know, there's a chance that Ragnarok, within its massive suite of accessibility, has something that will help. And, you know, I only hope that that, you know, pushes everything forward, much like Last of Us Part 1 has done with audio description and the interest in that, and Part 2 did in the first place. Ragnarok, I think, is going to show a whole other genre how to make accessibility work, at least to a point. So I can't wait to see, you know, a few years down the line, we might have accessible Dark Souls or accessible action rhythm game on consoles, which would be amazing, like fully playable kind of thing, would be phenomenal.
It's interesting because I saw they had categories for specific disabilities. So, for example, Best Physical Mobility Accessibility Award, Best Cognitive Accessibility. I mentioned, of course, the Best Blind Low Vision Accessibility. Is it ever frustrating to you when you come up against a game and you think, wow, they've put a huge amount of effort into players who have cognitive disabilities and they've put a lot of work into that, but, you know, they've forgotten the audio description? Does that happen? And what's your take on that?
It does happen. You know, you can see where work has been done in fields other than, let's say, gaming without sight. For an example, you know, there are many games where the accessibility could have been better from, you know, where I stand. But the point is, it's also important to celebrate those wins as well. So even if they don't help you directly, and as much as it might be frustrating, knowing that it's improving for other people as well is also a great motivator. Because, you know, once they've done the work on, so say it's a game that's going to then have a sequel on the same engine, like, you know, or a prequel in the case of Last of Us, where they sort of ported all the features to the you know, the prequel game, which is a very strange turn of events. You know, even with that, all the work had been done to make, say, the menus work and the navigation work and the auto aim and the captions and whatever else was working. So then all they have to do is improve upon it in the areas that were previously, like, not completely lacking, but weaker, let's say. So, you know, they might improve the audio design, they might improve the, you know, they might add menu narration because all the menus are now, you know, D-pad based, that kind of thing, or D-pad navigable. There's all sorts of things to look at. It does happen, though, that there are games that could be playable that just aren't for reasons, which is, you know, that's going to happen for anybody, really, not just whether you've got sight or not.
Yeah.
It's going to happen for any disability. But it's important to try and acknowledge those wins and be like, you know, I may not be able to play this game, but it's great that other people can. So that's a positive way to look at it.
One debate I follow a lot on social media, and in my case, it's Twitter. That's generally why I see these conversations likewise. Happen. Is around the subject of easy mode. Now, I know this starts a huge debate every time it gets brought up. And usually it comes from what I read into this is, you know, some people looking at the addition of accessibility features, making the game easier to use, so therefore creating an easy mode. Is that the case? Or is it that actually, you know, you're still able to play the game at the same speed as everyone else, but you obviously just have got more access to the knowledge of what's going on?
Yeah, like, definitely. It's certainly not the easy mode sort of rhetoric that people are saying, where, oh, just because you're adding accessibility features in, it's making it easier or whatever, or, you know, we need to make an easy mode and only lock the features to this. That is not the case, not at all. Because, you know, if I'm going through Last of Us Part 2 on Grounded, the game's hardest setting, on Grounded difficulty, and then separately on, you know, a different difficulty for permadeath, you know, I still need to have those accessibility options. I don't want to be locked just to playing on beginner or very light or casual or whatever they call it in the respective game, you know, just because I need accessibility features. I want to brutally push myself through whatever, you know, like, whatever I can. You know, if you said to me, you know, can you beat, like, say a game has full accessibility and you can find all the loot and everything without needing assistance, then you tell me, right, go through and beat this game just using your fists and, like, you're allowed to do everything else, like armor and everything. I'm like, yes, I will go through and do that if the game has the accessibility to let me. Now, I know there are people who won't put themselves through those challenges, but they should have just as much right to play the game, you know, with full accessibility as I do to go through and, you know, push myself to extremes.
Yeah.
If you like. So there's, you know, if you're saying accessibility means easy mode, accessibility means even being able to play a game in the first place. And if you think that's making a game easier, then, you know, try playing a game with your eyes closed.
Well, I was going to say, it sounds like that's coming from the same people who are saying, you know, blind people don't play video games because it's got the word video in the title. That's what it sounds like that comes from. You know, it comes from that lack of understanding, you know, the fundamental understanding of how accessibility actually works for people. I mean, no one, I don't think, would ever say, or I imagine people might say this, that using a screen reader is using Windows in easy mode. I don't think anybody would say. In fact, if anything, you need a lot more knowledge to be able to use Windows with JAWS than you would if you were using a keyboard and mouse and a screen.
That's just funny. Like, the idea, even the concept of that is funny.
I know. But so it doesn't work.
I think it does come from a lack of understanding, I think, the whole easy mode thing. Because, you know, if you can play a game without needing accessibility and the accessibility features, say like an auto aim, I've seen people on YouTube before saying, oh, this is how you make Last of Us Part 2 easier. I'm like, that is not making it easier because if you've got, say, multiple targets, then you still have to switch targets. You still have to aim for the head. You still have to be mindful of enemy types and other things.
And you can't just shoot anything in sight.
I mean, not on, you know, the even on like the standard difficulties. If you're on lower ones, maybe. But if you're playing, you know, if you want to play on the what might at least be termed as the developer intended experience, then, you know, so like your normal difficulty, for instance, the enemies are going to hit hard. They're going to one hit kill you. They're going to cause you massive problems. And particularly in a game like say Last of Us or God of War, where gear can matter, where, you know, the number of bullets in your gun can definitely matter. All sorts of things can go wrong, even if you're playing on the lowest difficulty. And because you make one mistake, even if you've got your accessibility options on, that's not going to prevent you, your enemies from just coming in and making your day very, very bad indeed. So,
I want to also pick up on another suite of awards, if you like, that were announced at the GA Conf yesterday, and that was for Best Journalism and the Advocacy Award. And both those awards went to one guy, Grant Stoner. Some people will know Grant because he's written for The Washington Post. He now writes for IGN. He also writes for Wired magazine occasionally as well. And he's done some fantastic work. How important, I mean, journalism is obviously a credit to him and his talent, but the advocacy, that's the bit that's important, isn't it? Getting the word out there to, let's just say, the players who aren't disabled, that it's possible for us to play.
Yeah. And I think, you know, for this instance, at the very least, the journalism and advocacy tie in together really well. Because, you know, if you're utilizing these mainstream platforms, so your IGNs, your Wireds, your Washington Posts, then you're getting that information to an audience that otherwise might be blissfully unaware, shall we say, of the challenges of even being able to play a game in the first instance. So, you know, I feel like it's great to see both of those awards being available and, you know, in this case, one tying into the other in such a sort of a clean way of, you know, journalism is advocacy in that sense. It's not always the case, of course, but in this particular instance, it's great to see that happen.
Well, last night, just after the awards were finished, I got in touch with Grant and I got him to give me his immediate reaction to winning both those awards.
It's strange, because I always view my work as uplifting others. That's the entire purpose of what I do. I write about other disabled people because for years, disabled people haven't really had a prominent voice in games. And I always make a point to not make stories about myself, but rather highlight those who are doing like community events or charities or how other disabled people are shaping the industry. So I've always chosen to not be front and center with everything I do. And it's kind of shocking, I guess, to be recognized for my work because I never really wanted it to be like that. I always want others to receive the recognition for what they do.
But it's interesting, isn't it? Because you were recognized for journalism and for advocacy, which, although some might argue are this one and the same, they're not. They're actually quite different because you're being recognised for your talent on one hand, and the other side you're being recognised for what it is you're promoting. So that must mean a lot to you.
It does. It really shows like how far the games industry has come for highlighting disabled people and for putting them front and centre for stories, videos, features, what have you. And for me, running an advocacy award is evident that the industry's mindset is shifting toward recognizing disabled people and their contributions. It's a shock that I didn't expect to win either. I was joking with my one friend, because we were watching it together, Ben Bayless, who was also up for the Journalism Award, who is now a developer at Rockstar Games. Ben is an amazing person. And we were joking in the chat before the well, I was like, oh, you got this, you're fine. You're going to win this, you're the editor-in-chief of Can I Play That? You're fine, you win this. They're like, Grant, I was like, no, No, it should be you. It should be you, Ben.
But it was you.
It was me, yeah.
So, I mean, great to hear Grant there, right? And again, great work he does in journalism and advocacy. A worthy winner, I'm sure you'd agree.
Yeah, definitely. Most certainly. Grant's been around for a long time in various capacities. I've run into him virtually on numerous occasions and had, you know, good interactions with him. And it's, you know, clear to see he's passionate about what he's doing, and he's doing a great job of it as well, of conveying the need for accessibility, the ever-present need. You know, it's not going to go away. If anything, it's going to get much stronger as time goes on, as, you know, the population ages, as, you know, people who could play games 30 years ago now can't play games because the accessibility is not there, or any number of other reasons. So it's great to see such a well-deserving winner, you know, get that title, that award.
So the accessibility of the games themselves is one area. The advocacy, telling people about why it's important accessibility is in there, is another. These were all themes coming through. There was another, though, which stood out for me, and there were many categories that were brilliant and very, you know, well-deserving winners. But one in particular that stood out was Best Representation. And this was an award to really, I guess, promote the use of disabled characters in gaming. And the winner in this case was Just Dance. Again, dancing and Stephen Scott are not words that generally sit in the same sentence. But if I was going to, then, you know, that would be cool. And in this case, it was there was a 2023 version of the game, and it had a wheelchair user that was featured in the game that someone would, I guess, watch and then feel, hey, I'm represented. That's important.
Definitely. And I think the interesting thing is, you know, I've been discussing representation in Bursts for a long time. I was part of a panel at EGX on representation myself a few years ago. And the interesting thing to note is representation is still a much neglected area in terms of, you know, getting characters in that feel, you know, that make a player feel like they belong.
Yeah.
You know, for instance. So you've got, like, blind characters, for instance, in games like Perception, Beyond Eyes, even franchises where, you know, enemies are blind. So Berserkers in Gears of War is the classic one. And there's probably others as well. But the point being, they are mostly seen as, you know, flat and one-dimensional characters. You know, I've never been able to play as a blind character in a mainstream game yet. You know, not at least not that I can remember. You know, and that's the thing. You want to be able to sort of know that's the thing you can do. So if somebody came up and asked me, can I play as a blind character or somebody with no sight in a mainstream game? I'm like, I can't think of any examples where you can and have an accessible experience the same as everyone else, which is the key thing. You know, if the accessibility is there and the representation isn't, you know, that's one way of looking at it. But if the accessibility isn't there and the representation is, that's also a problem. So you want those two things to be, you know, looked at together. And I think that's what this award is trying to promote. It's trying to show, you know, accessibility is great. Representation needs to be a part of that conversation. So it's good to see that being, you know, promoted and put forward.
And in a weird way, it could kind of, I mean, I could imagine playing a disabled character, a blind character in my case, in a game, and then essentially all the accessibility that I would need in the real world become available in the game, right? So, you know, I could turn on audio description on the TV whilst I'm not shooting, you know, hordes of people to death or whatever it is you do for fun in these games. You know, so you know, you could enable essentially the accessible experience. Like if you had a device that you had to use, like a phone in a game, it would talk to you, right? It would give you audio feedback. That, you know, that kind of thing, just to kind of
sort of immersion, the experience. Really.
And
I feel like there's definitely you know, a way of looking at that as well. You know, there's been sort of speculation about a Daredevil game for years.
Oh yeah,
and I've been thinking, if you make a Daredevil game and you make it playable, you know, with accessibility features, you know, you could even do it so that there is a deliberate mode where, you know, you can turn it on as an option where you don't see anything, maybe, or you see only a limited subset. You see only the information that is, you know, Daredevil is privy to himself through his senses. You know, so it's like limited HUD UI, challenging sort of optional HUD, which would be very interesting. So I feel like there's I mean, Daredevil's
and that's
one example,
better, right? That's
in...
better than having, say, for example, a Blind Drive game. Not that there's anything wrong with Blind Drive, but...
No, Blind Drive's a great game.
It's a brilliant game. But what you don't want, I guess, is you kind of want to layer over the experience on the existing game rather than creating a whole other game. Different for... I'm using Blind Drive as an example, but what I mean is if it was a game like Last of Us Part 1, you wouldn't want a blind version of that. You would want to just play...
You want the same game as everybody else. That's the main thing. Like, even with stuff like, I'm thinking of, you know, like hero shooters or things like that. Doesn't mean you couldn't have a blind character, like say in a sci-fi setting, you could have a character, you know, who's got sort of not necessarily Geordi LaForge levels in Star Trek where it's just absolutely ridiculous, but to a level where, you know, through accessibility elements, it still works out the same way, or, you know, it could be like ability stuff. There's all sorts of ways to do it, even in like fantasy settings or, you know, the, for lack of a better word, the mundane settings as well. You know, like sort of modern day where you're wandering around with a cane, you're using a phone, you're, you know, getting in a driverless car. I don't know. There's all sorts of things that you could do. And even stuff like, you know, rock climbing, you know, maybe free running, like acoustic rifle shooting, archery, there's all sorts of stuff that like people with no sight can do and do that would probably amaze people who have sight, and they're like, how does this work? But being able to normalize that in a game setting would be great to see.
And it's such a great way to advocate without advocating, if you know what I mean. It kind of just does it. It becomes part of, you know, that person's experience, that they just see what the capability is without really thinking about it. It is incredible. How important for you is it these games exist? It's an annual event. How important is it for you that they are present?
I feel like it's crucial that these events happen. So things like the GA Conf Awards need to keep happening. But it would be better if, you know, they could also be integrated into other shows as well, potentially. So the Game Awards, you know, there was an accessibility award, but wouldn't it be great if, you know, it was part of the same show, so that then, you know, the 85 million or whatever it was viewers would then see, oh, these games are improving in accessibility. Because, you know, the greater the audience you open it up to, you know, the more potential it has to, you know, increase promotion, PR, and just conversation around accessibility. But, you know, nevertheless, having it be such a slickly presented show with, you know, an amazing line of presenters, which, you know, I was honoured to be featured as a part of, alongside amazing individuals and a great host in the form of Steve Saylor, of course. The fact of the matter is that, you know, award shows, as I said before, can learn from this. You know, trim it down to what you need and just go with it. You know, throw all the information at people so they know who won in what, sharing that hype, sharing that excitement. And, you know, being able to earn these awards should be a catalyst for people to reach for it. So, you know, if, say, you know, a publisher or a studio or a developer wants to go for it, that should be an encouragement, a bolstering force, if you like, to say, you know, why are you doing this? I'm going for the GA Conf Awards.
Yeah.
You know, and it's very much a cornerstone of that. And it's great to see GA Conf evolving from a conference now, not just into a conference, but an award show as well, to showcase all the hard work that goes on throughout the year. Accessibility isn't just Global Accessibility Awareness Day in May. It's not just World Sight Day in October. It's not just any of those things on their own. It's all year round for everybody. Like, you could wake up tomorrow morning and not have any sight for whatever reason, or you could wake up tomorrow morning not being able to hear out of one ear. You could, there's all sorts of potentially horrible scenarios you could go through, even for a temporary time, but you will need accessibility to get through those. And without things like the GA Conf Awards showcasing how accessibility is improving, sometimes you wouldn't even know that it is without that information being disseminated. So it's great to see it being pushed for and constantly, you know, getting bigger and bigger.
Sightless Combat, great to have you on the show. Thank you for what you do, and I really look forward to talking to you again soon, especially on the subject of video editing. Looking forward to that.
I know you're excited about that. Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure. And if anyone wants to find me, you can find me on Twitter at Sightless Combat, SIGHTLESSKOMBAT. Also on Twitch and YouTube as well, and my website, sightlesscombat.com. And all you can and you can also reach out to gaming@rnib.org.uk as well, if you want to know what the organization is doing in terms of, you know, current and future gaming endeavors.
Great to have you on, Sightless. And like he says, there's lots of ways you can follow him. You can follow his streams online as well, the work he does with RNIB, which we will get into more detail in the next few weeks and months with Sightless. He is coming back, as I say, to talk about video editing as well. Really looking forward to that. Now, stick around. The host of the Game Conference Awards, Steve Saylor, the blind gamer himself, joins us next right here on Double Tap.
Follow Double Tap on social media at Double Tap On Air and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts and email us feedback@doubletaponair.com. We'll be right back. This is Double Tap. Now, back to the show.
Great to have your company today. Hope you're enjoying the chat about gaming. It's very interesting, isn't it? Learning about how games like, you know, the ones we've been talking about today, AAA games, the big games that all the kids are playing, and some adults too, they're accessible. They're becoming more accessible. Now, yes, like Sightless said earlier, it's not perfect yet, but it is getting there. And the fact is that the games companies, they are listening to disabled people, they're engaging with us, and that can only be to the good, right? More of these console games are becoming more accessible. And that, you know, leads on to all kinds of interesting conversations about what the future will be in terms of virtual reality and how augmented reality games will work and will we be able to play them. Well, look, if the companies themselves have finally got it in their heads that accessibility matters, then you have to hope that that will feed into all that. So very interesting. But we are, of course, talking about the Game Conference Awards, and they were hosted by the man himself, blind gamer from Canada, Steve Saylor, and he joins me right now here on Double Tap. Great to have you with us here, Steve.
It is absolutely a pleasure, Stephen. Thank you so much for having me on again. I love coming back onto your show.
Oh, I really appreciate that, man. And you know what's great? I got the chance to watch the event. And it's funny because I was saying earlier to Sightless Combat, you know, I'm not the biggest gamer in the world, but I was really excited about the event last night. And I think it was because it was all about accessibility. So I felt like I was kind of with my tribe watching people who, you know, can get it and you know, can actually play the games. And everything I'm hearing about, I can take part in. That was, I think, for me, the big deal. You were hosting, which was amazing.
Yes.
I don't even need to ask how you got the gig, because why wouldn't they ask you would be my first question.
You know what? I love Ian and Tara, who run the GA conference every year. That's what it was initially part of, the Game Accessibility Conference that is run twice a year, one in North America, one in Europe. I believe actually the next one is in the UK in April,
I believe. London, yes.
So that'll be really cool. But UK or Paris, I can't remember. I apologize. That I should have gotten one of the plot points for even beforehand, but no, I love working with them, and they asked, hey, would you want to be able to host this thing, and I was like, do I have to leave anywhere? And they're like, yeah, nope. I'm like, perfect, good, let's do it.
I could do it from my room.
I was wearing a suit, but no one really knows behind the scenes. No, exclusive. I was wearing pajama pants the entire time, so.
That is the best thing about doing virtual stuff, right? You can, top half can be
exactly
beautiful.
I should clarify, pants is different in the US than it is in the UK. I was wearing pajama bottoms, not
exactly, yes. Please,
not just boxers.
Please clarify that, because yes, my audience might be a little bit confused. But no, it's really interesting because you got the chance to host this. And I guess for you, it was a kind of like a culmination of a lot of the work you've been doing for a long time. You've been doing some amazing work. I've been following you. And, you know, I remember you standing outside the Eaton Centre in Toronto with that huge sign, that huge billboard, which had your face on it. And, you know, your face on the image, I could tell, was just beaming the same way, right? That was work you were doing with Xbox, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I had been doing some projects here and there with Xbox, and that billboard actually was via Twitter. Twitter had this campaign going on at the time. It was sort of like basically tweet into existence, and it was sort of a play on like different celebrities. Like Simu Liu had tweeted out saying that he wanted to be Shang-Chi, and then and then he actually became him. And so the whole campaign was like, take the tweet, and then they sort of showcased that, okay, this actually actually happened. And so I tweeted out one day I wanted to work with Xbox, and there was a photo of me basically working with Xbox. And I will admit, seeing my face at like in a skyscraper sized billboard was a sight to see in a very snowy January of last year. So that was, never thought I would be on a billboard someday. So I can check that off as a thing I didn't expect to happen in my life.
See, that's the joy of radio for me. I no one needs to see this face, and you know, I'm quite happy.
See, I thought I had a face for radio, but apparently I got a face for a billboard. So all right, I'll take what I can get.
No, you're a superstar these days. So the Game Conference Awards, as they are, tell us a little bit more about the history of that and how that came to be from your point of view.
Well, actually, how the involvement with it happened was initially canIplaythat.com, which is a great site for talking about accessibility. They do a lot of accessibility reviews and previews and news. The site always had like this yearly awards given out to the best of accessibility throughout the year. Due to basically they weren't able to run it this year, so. They were in talks with the GA conference, and they were like, hey, could you be able to take this and run with it? And it just totally made sense. It was a perfect partnership between Can I Play That and Game Accessibility Conference. With all of what a Game Accessibility Conference had been doing over the past multiple years of running these conferences, talking about accessibility and building a community of game developers and just and accessibility advocates, it just seemed like a perfect fit to honor the games that we've been talking about and having developers on to talk about their games. And it made sense to highlight and celebrate the amazing work that is being done in the accessibility community and all the accessible games that have been put out just within the past year.
And of course, all this really does is promote this to other gaming companies who might be thinking, okay, is my game accessible enough? And if not, making it accessible. There is a reality with this, though, isn't there? There is a time lag from the period where we want to talk about games becoming accessible and then them actually becoming accessible. And I guess The Last of Us Part 2 and then The Last of Us Part 1 becoming more accessible is a good example of that, right? It takes time for them to build this in because of the length of time it takes to build the games.
Oh, 100%. And we kind of always had said when The Last of Us 2 came out and it was getting, rightfully so, all the accolades that it was getting for its accessibility, this was going to be something that that we still have yet to see the impact of in regards to the industry. I kind of said at the time, it's going to be about in between 5 to 10 years when we can actually get to a point where majority of developers and studios are putting out games that are hopefully as close to being as accessible as The Last of Us Part 2. So we're still kind of in that middle period where they're like, the good thing is that now studios understand the why accessibility is important in their games. And now we're just figuring out the how. And so, and because every game is different, every sort of studio is different in what their experience comes in and who they need to be able to bring in to help with that or what the process is. So we're still in that kind of like flux period, but we are starting to see some gems and some highlights of games that are doing it and doing it well from indies all the way up to AAA. I mean, it's really cool to be able to see. It's not just the big boys that are making accessible games. It's the indie developers too. Like there's in some cases they're able to put in more great accessibility content into their games more than the AAAs can. So it really is a great time in the industry to be jumping in on accessibility. And the more time passes, the more games that come out, the more accessible the gaming industry will be.
Yeah, I heard you say this at the awards itself, and I heard you talking about the fact that it's good that we celebrate the indie developers as well. Because oftentimes the suggestion is that you need lots of money, you need lots of resources to make this happen. But like you're saying, a lot of it is just often just thinking about accessibility, understanding what's needed to be in the game. And that is partly about talking to the community, right?
100%. Because they're the ones that are going to be playing it. So that getting that community feedback is important. But also, you can't just sort of slap on an accessibility option and be like, okay, good. Now our game's accessible. It's not as simple as that. There are like even like, as I've often said, is that disability is a spectrum than it is an on-off switch. And even with someone that has the exact same disability, their two lives could be completely different. I have a friend of mine, James Rath, who is a blind YouTuber. We both have the same condition. We both have nystagmus. We both have albinism. And we have the exact same experiences, but we both have different different sort of a blindness that like he has to use a cane all the time, whereas I don't as often. He's looking into getting a guide dog, whereas I don't need one. It's so even with that in and of itself, it just kind of shows the diversity of disabilities in that sense. So when you have when studios bring in the community to basically say, hey, can we like what does this game feel like? What does this game work like? It's sort of allows us to kind of showcase here's our day-to-day experience and not every disability is different. So the more options and the more customization you can give into a game, the better it'll be.
There are so many names, and a lot of them I know, a lot of them I don't, because I'm not as plugged into the community as you are, but you are one of those names. I know Ian Hamilton, Grant Stoner, mm-hmm. of course, we talked to earlier, Sightless Combat as well, who we spoke mm-hmm. to. You know, there are many names who are brilliant advocates, and it is so impressive to me how this movement has really changed things. And what I would say is a fairly, what feels like a short space of time when you think about the challenges we have in other areas, like, for example, accessibility to, you know, appliances or television, you know, other areas just don't seem to get that, I don't know, that groundswell, you know, behind it that gaming does. Is it the nature of gaming that it's a community in itself that helps drive forward the innovation we've seen?
I think so. I mean, the main part of why video games and why there's a big sort of push in accessibility in video games is that video games is inherently a social medium. Mm-hmm. It's different than it is with like TV or radio or movies, where it's a very passive sort of experience when you go to experience that type of entertainment. With video games, it's very interactive. Like, you're interacting with the game, but as multiplayer games have become sort of the norm, and with games like Fortnite and Call of Duty Warzone and a lot of like multiplayer games, it's become, and especially over the pandemic, video games was an amazing way for us to be able to connect with each other from anywhere around the world. And so as it being a social medium, it allowed us to be able to, as an accessibility community, to be able to kind of get together and be like, hey, we just want to play games and play games with our friends. And it kind of goes back to when we were kids, where we just want, like, when your friends are kind of playing off in the playground, and it's like, I want to join in too. Yeah. And the problem is with video games is that oftentimes we can't. And even growing up as like as someone with disabilities, it's like sometimes you can't play with those friends. So it is kind of a sort of a disappointing experience when you can't join in and have that social aspect. And that was one thing I really started to appreciate over the pandemic, was that a lot of ways I was able to connect with friends and brand new people within the accessibility community was literally being able to play video games. And so I think that as we started to connect with each other, the more and more we were like, okay, you know what? Our voices definitely need to be heard, and the louder we became.
So where does it go next? Because it felt like we were, you know, getting one announcement a year, and then suddenly it was maybe two or three games, and it seems to just be ramping up in terms of hearing more accessible games coming out. Is that the sense you're getting? Do you feel that?
Yeah, it is. It is ramping up for sure. Like the train is kind of leaving the station, and it's just like we're starting to kind of gain some steam, which is great. And as more and more games kind of come out, and the more times that it comes up with, like, when people are talking about accessibility, not even just within the community but outside of it, and just sort of the general gaming public, we'll start to kind of expect games to be like accessible. And I think that in the future, I still I'm in that kind of prediction. It's like we still get to sort of see the full true impact on the industry that The Last of Us did with that Naughty Dog was able to do with that game. But I think that we're kind of in that, we're starting to see what that future holds. And there's quite a few games that are coming out that are coming up for Xbox that that have a very strong accessibility core to them. PlayStation has just been killing it with all of their games as of late. Like like all their first party games have been amazingly accessible, and we'll see that hopefully this year with Spider-Man 2 coming out this year. And Insomniac has done a great job with accessibility. So they're having their accessibility controller, as you talked about earlier a couple shows ago about Project Leonardo. I think the future is bright. In some cases, as being in it, it could be slower than we would like, but in all intents and purposes, when you kind of look at it, it's like, yeah, we've kind of grown a lot, even just within the past 2 years since The Last of Us 2 came out, which is so weird to say that it's been two years since that game came out already.
I know. It is amazing. So, what's next for Steve Saylor then? What are you doing now? Because you're deep into this now, right? So you could be running Naughty Dog at some point. I have that feeling.
So for me, it's kind of twofold. I've been doing a lot of content creation, kind of really talking about and doing more reviews of video games. I feel like that is kind of still needed. And there's not really a lot of creators that kind of focus in on that. There's amazing accessibility creators, but I feel like I have with the professional radio background that I have, I feel like I can be able to talk about that. So I'll be doing a lot more reviews of games. And then I'm also still consulting. Can't say which games I'm working on yet, but one that I'm working on right now, actually, I can say, is that I'm currently the accessibility consultant for the Call of Duty franchise. Wow. So we'll start to see with the next little while of stuff that I'll be working on that'll be making. Basically, my goal is to try to be able to make Call of Duty as accessible as possible. So and that's one of the biggest franchises in video games. So if I fingers crossed that me and the team could be able to work on that and make it possible, then that just makes it accessibility expand even more to the general gaming public than before. So it's kind of going with the flow and seeing what happens.
Steve, it's so good to have you on. Thank you so much for coming on. Remind people where we can find you or where we can follow you online.
Sure. Yeah. You can be able to go to stevesaylor.net. That's where I'm mostly at. But if you can follow me on Twitter at Steve Saylor or on YouTube at Steve Saylor or on twitch.tv/blindgamersteve.
Steve Saylor, thanks so much for coming back on to Double Tap.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
And like Steve says, follow him online, follow him everywhere you can get him. That's it for us today, though. I am out, but back tomorrow with more of your feedback on a wide range of topics you've been emailing in. Keep that feedback coming. feedback@doubletaponair.com or call our listener line, 1-877-803-4567. Catch you tomorrow.
Love Double Tap? Did you know we're on the TV too? Check out brand new episodes of Double Tap TV on AMI TV every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern. Or binge on all episodes online at ami.ca/Double Tap. We're also on YouTube. Search for Double Tap to catch our episodes there too.
The Walrus is Canada's conversation, and you're invited to take part. Download AMI's Voices of the Walrus, where professional narrators read selected articles from the magazine. Available wherever you download your AMI podcasts.